for a performer who is sloppy or careless. And he was drinking on the first day of the tour, when things should have been fresh and new. What will it be like a month from now, when life on the road really begins to wear thin? A commotion at the far end of the backyard pulls me from my thoughts. Herr Neuhoff storms across the grounds, face red, cigar clenched between his teeth. At first, it seems he is going to berate Peter for his act again. But he is headed toward one of the Polish laborers, Milos, I think he is called, though I do not know him well. Milos is soldering a piece of tent pole, the gun shooting sparks in all directions, including toward a nearby bale of hay. Fire is a grave concern for the circus. Herr Neuhoff speaks to Milos in a low voice, trying to keep the matter quiet, but his voice rises belligerently. Herr Neuhoff grabs the soldering gun and points in the distance.
"You'll be sorry," Milos swears.
He tosses his hat to the ground, then picks it up and storms off again. Did Herr Neuhoff fire him? The circus is like a family. Workers returning each year, and Herr Neuhoff is generous to them, even in retirement. But carelessness cannot be tolerated. Peter crosses the field to confer with Herr Neuhoff. I start toward them, still holding Theo. They stop talking as I near, as though they do not want me to hear. My annoyance flares. I am not some child to be sheltered. For everything I have achieved, though, I am still a woman, my status less. "What happened with the pole?" I demand.
"I had to let him go. I had no choice."
"I'll find him and smooth things over. Give him a good letter and a bit of severance."
Herr Neuhoff's voice is uneasy.
"Letting go of an angry worker could be dangerous," Peter says.
He is worried, I can tell, about protecting my identity. What if Milos tells someone, or goes to the police? As Peter watches me, I catch a flash of something deeper in his eyes. Concern. And perhaps something more. I recall what Noah had said about Peter's feelings for me. Maybe she is right. I brush the notion aside once more.
"There are all sorts of dangers," Herr Neuhoff retorts, a veiled reference to Peter's political act.
Peter does not answer, but stomps away. I wonder if Herr Neuhoff will go after him. Instead, he gestures in the direction of the train, beckoning me to follow. "I need to speak with you." He stops at the door, uncomfortable in the woman's carriage, even though it is empty. Herr Neuhoff coughs, his face reddening. He pulls a handkerchief from his pocket and raises it to his mouth. When he pulls it away again, it is tinged with pink.
"Are you ill?" I ask. "My heart condition," he rasps.
I am alarmed. For all of the years I have known him, I had no idea.
"Is it serious?"
"No, no,"
he replies, waving his hand. "But I catch every cold that comes by. The damp weather doesn't help either. As I was saying, the worker, Milos, if I offer him a severance, then word may get out and others could ask for money. But if he goes to the police, what do you think?"
I falter. There are things I can tell him that I learned from Papa. I am still a guest here, though. This is not my circus, but another time and place. I proceed cautiously.
"It is a difficult decision. Everything is so different now." "I wanted to talk to you about something else," he says, switching topics abruptly,
and I realize that Milos isn't the real reason he asked me to speak.
"Astrid," he begins, using that gentle tone, the one that means he is bringing me bad news.
I brace for some confirmation of what had happened to my family, the awful truth that deep down I already know.
You understand that the circus is in a very delicate position right now.
I know, I reply. I'm not sure what I can do to help.
For one thing, you need to speak to Peter about the act.
This again. My worry is replaced with annoyance.
We already discussed it. I told you. We can't stop him from being who he is.
Surely if you explain to him the jeopardy it is causing, he presses, if he had to choose between your well-being and the show.
He would choose me, I say firmly, forcing more confidence into my voice than I actually feel. After what had happened with Eric, I could never be certain of that again with anyone.
But I don't want him to have to choose.
You must, he insists. After the show the other night, the German seeing you.
He knows. My stomach leadens.
How did you know about that? Did Noah tell you?
Of course she had. I had confided in no one else.
Astrid, that doesn't matter.
A flash of admission crosses his face, confirming my suspicion.
What's important is that the circus has drawn more scrutiny than it can afford. I had a visit from an inspector earlier today.
A rock forms in my stomach. An inspection? On a Sunday? Were they looking for me?
They are threatening to send us back, he adds.
To Germany?
My whole body tenses.
Possibly. Or perhaps somewhere in Alsace-Lorraine.
The border region, which had gone back and forth between Germany and France for centuries, had been swiftly annexed by the Reich at the start of the war. Going to Alsace and returning to Germany were one and the same.
Would they really do that, so soon after we've set out?
I ask, already knowing the answer. Herr Neuhoff coughs again and rubs at his temple.
They almost didn't let us go on tour this year at all.
Really? I had no idea.
There is so much he keeps to himself.
I know that going back is not ideal for your situation, he adds.
For a second, I wonder if he is threatening me. But his voice is neutral, simply stating the facts.
You see now why I need Peter to stop.
He continues.
I've asked them for an extension, explained that the tour dates are set, and that canceling would be damaging to the business. But as you know, the Reich doesn't care about business.
No, I agree. They would not hesitate to punish us for stepping out of line. I have been recognized, and Herr Neuhoff knows it. The audacity of it all dawns on me. How could I have thought I might remain hidden in something as big and public as the circus?
I should go, I say slowly.
Herr Neuhoff's eyes widen.
Leave the circus. I've brought too much danger to the show already.
I have no idea where I would go. But I had left once. I could do it again.
No, that isn't what I had in mind at all, he protests hurriedly. But if my presence is bringing danger, then I should leave, I persist. Don't be silly. The circus cannot function without you. He cannot function without you.
Herr Neuhoff gestures with his head toward the field, to the spot where Peter has returned to practicing. I wonder if what Herr Neuhoff says is true. Then I look down at Theo. He needs me, as does Noah.
You will stay. This is your home.
He coughs once, then again.
If we can just ride out the season here in France.
I understand. I will talk to Peter,
I promise.
That's a start, he says. His face remains troubled. But I'm afraid it isn't all.
I don't understand. What more can I do?
You see, the status quo is our friend, and we must do whatever we can to preserve it. The circus must be kept going at all costs. So that's why I'm doing it, he says.
I tilt my head, puzzled.
Since that German soldier saw you, he takes a deep breath. I have no choice but to remove you from the show.
Chapter 12. Noah. I hurry toward the fairgrounds, not looking back toward Luke, even when I reach the cover of the trees. Halfway through the woods, I realize that I have been running. I slow to catch my breath. Meeting Luke was strange, and the way he watched me left me with a feeling of lingering discomfort. But it was exciting, too, a spark where I had not expected to feel one again. I imagine telling Astrid, confiding in her like the sister I never had. 20 minutes later, I reach the fairgrounds. As I near the train, I see Astrid standing by the entrance to the sleeper car, glowering. For a minute, I think she is angry that I was gone so long, or perhaps she saw me speaking with Luke. Her eyes burn with rage as I climb onto the train. Then Herr Neuhoff's bulky silhouette appears in the doorway behind her, and I realize that it is something much more serious than that.
How could you? She demands. How could you do it?
She has somehow learned my secret. About the German soldier. About the baby.
I know the truth.
Astrid snarls, coming at me. I freeze.
How could you?
Astrid nears, arms raised as though she intends to strike me. I step back, tripping over the edge of a steamer trunk sticking out from beneath a berth. Astrid's face is inches from mine, and I can feel her hot breath and spittle.
He's pulled me from the act.
I realize she is talking about the fact that I had told Herr Neuhoff someone had recognized her at the show. She does not know my secret. This is almost as bad, though. All of the trust I have worked to build with Astrid is gone. Her eyes glower like hot coals.
No!
I blurt. Despite his promise, Herr Neuhoff had revealed that it was me who told him after all. Now Astrid is out of the show.
You're a liar,
she says, fists clenched.
There, there,
Peter murmurs to Astrid, putting a hand on her shoulder to calm her. But he does not step between us or hold her back.
Astrid!
Herr Neuhoff steps forward, trying to intervene.
It wasn't Noah!
But she moves around him, still coming at me.
Are you trying to replace me, you little demon?
The idea is so far-fetched, I could almost laugh aloud, if Astrid was not so angry.
Not at all!
I protest quickly. Her distrust cuts through me like a dagger.
I would never do that.
I was worried about you. I had thought I was doing it for her own good, but I see now how it must look to her. A few of the other girls have gathered in the door of the carriage, and they whisper, eyeing me with unmasked hostility. Performers do not tell on one another. I had broken a cardinal rule and risked the show. One of the girls is holding Theo, and I take him from her, clutching him close to my chest like armor. Then I turn to Peter, who has been watching the fight.
She was in danger. You know that!
He shrugs, unwilling to side against Astrid to help me.
You shouldn't have done it. The secret was hers to tell or not.
But his voice carries no force. Deep down he knows I had done it to protect Astrid, where he had not dared. and is silently thanking me for it.
I kept your secret, Astrid growls in a low voice.
I glance over my shoulder, where Herr Neuhoff stands just behind me, praying he has not heard.
This is different, I whisper. Can't she see that? I told in order to protect her.
I hold my breath, waiting for her to tell the others that Theo is not my brother. But she turns away, still shaking with anger.
We'll need to fix the damage and take precautions, Herr Neuhoff interjects,
his voice more authoritative than I have heard.
Astrid will sit out the show for the remainder of our performances in tears.
But, Herr Neuhoff...
Astrid begins to plead her case anew. Then she stops, seeing that she has lost.
Can she rejoin us in the next town? I ask hopefully.
We'll see, Herr Neuhoff replies,
unwilling to promise even that much.
Meanwhile, you need to prepare for the show without Astrid. Goethe will catch for you.
But I can't, I protest.
I've barely managed to fly with Astrid. There is no way I can trust anyone else.
I need Astrid.
I look from Herr Neuhoff to Astrid desperately, but she simply turns away.
Prepare them for the next show, he instructs Astrid.
She has been removed from the act, but not absolved from the responsibility of having me ready. Astrid does not answer him, but turns and stares daggers at me, still not speaking.
Come, says Goethe firmly. We must rehearse.
I duck away and follow her from the train, grateful to escape Astrid's wrath. The next night, I stand alone in the dressing car, apart from the other girls. Astrid is not there, and despite the warmth and noisy chatter, the carriage feels empty without her. She has not spoken to me since the previous day, even at practice. She did not sleep in our carriage, going instead, I imagine, to Peter's. When I passed her in the train corridor, I'd wanted to say something to make it better. But I couldn't find the words, and she'd walked past silently, averting her eyes. I do everything myself now, the makeup, and the chalk, and the tape, my hands moving where Astrid's had before. When I am fully dressed and ready, I start away from the train car in the direction of the big top. I scan the program posted at the entrance. My act has been moved to the first half of the show, in order to give Goethe more time to cover both Astrid's role and her own. As I read the program with no mention of Astrid, the events of the previous day and her rage at my betrayal crash down upon me anew. She had been removed from the show because of me. My stomach leadens, first with guilt, then dread. How can I possibly perform without her? As I start around the big top to the backyard, I see someone lingering by the edge of the fairgrounds. A man stands separate from the rest of the gathering spectators, kicking his foot against the dirt. Luke, I realize. I stop with surprise, jumping back around the corner. What is he doing here? He had mentioned possibly coming to the show, but I never expected him to actually do it. And in my worry about Astrid being removed from the act, I had nearly forgotten. But now here he is, standing just feet away from me. My heart skips with more excitement than it should. I start toward him, then stop. He is a stranger, and one who makes me uncomfortable at that. I step into the shadow of the big top once more. Wearing a crisp dress shirt, dark hair damp and freshly combed, he looks even handsomer than when we met. He seems uncomfortable, though, keeping his head low and taking in the scene from the corner of his eye. Out of his element, not at all like the confident boy I'd met in town. I want to go to him, but there is not enough time, and we cannot be seen together. The other performers are making their way to the backyard, and as they assemble, Luke slips from sight. As he disappears into the crowd, I feel a slight pang, and I fight the urge to go after him. What if he realizes that coming was a mistake, and decides not to stay after all? Looking back at the performers as they stretch and ready themselves, I notice that Astrid is not here, and though nearly the whole circus has gathered, there is a gaping hole without her. I've performed only a handful of times, guided by her strong hands. I can't possibly go on by myself. A few minutes later, the bell rings, and I hurry around the big top to take my place in the backyard. I peek through the curtain. Luke is in the first row, and I wonder how he has managed such a seat on short notice. His arms are folded, and he takes in the ring before him without expression. I want to run to him, or at least wave. But the orchestra is nearly finished tuning, and the tent goes completely dark. The opening note booms to a crescendo, and the show begins. I peek out once more. Luke leans forward in his chair, and a light in his eyes begins to dance as he follows the performers, scantily clad girls on horseback. My jealousy grows as he takes in their elegant, barely covered bodies. The first half of the show, which is usually exciting and rushed, seems to take forever. To pass the time, I study the audience. In the row behind Luke sits a little girl with shiny blonde curls, holding a doll. She wears a pink starched dress, and I can tell from the way she smooths the hem that it is her prized outfit, the one that comes out only a few times a year for special occasions. The man beside her, her father, I guess, hands her a cone of freshly spun cotton candy, and as she takes a bite, her cheeks rise with wonder. Her eyes never leave the show. The ring is cleared again, and the clowns tumble in. Peter steps on stage and begins to perform his political routine, the very one that Herr Neuhoff forbade. He is actually doing it. Watching, I am suddenly angry. How can he choose his art, knowing the risk it brings to Astrid, and all of us? The fact that Astrid is out of the show does not mean that she is safe. The children in the audience laugh at his antics, unaware of the subtext. But the adults remain silent, some shifting uncomfortably in their seats. A couple slips out of the back of the tent. The clowns finish to weak applause. It is our turn. Goethe and I start into the ring, finding our way in the darkness. "Goethe," I whisper, as I reach the base of the ladder. "I'm going to spin just before you catch me on the second pass." I can feel her stiffen with surprise. "Astrid never said anything about it." Astrid is in charge of all of the aerialists. She calls the shots. No one has changed her choreography before. "It will work better," I insist. "And it changes nothing for you. The positioning will be the same. Just catch me." Before she can say anything else, I climb up the ladder. I reach the top a second late, the spotlight already waiting for me. I wait for Gerda's call. "Hup!" I leap without hesitation. When I release, there is a moment's panic. I have practiced only once with Goethe as my catcher. Will she be able to manage as Astrid had? Catching is all Goethe has ever done on the flying trapeze, though. She grasps me easily, with forearms like thick sausages. But she is not skilled, and lacks Astrid's fire. Working with someone other than Astrid feels like cheating, a betrayal. I look around the ring, searching in vain for Astrid. Is she watching somewhere, hating me for going on without her? I reach the board at the end of the first pass. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Luke. It is one of the first rules I had learned from Astrid upon coming to the circus. Do not let the audience, or anyone in it, serve as a distraction. I can't help it, though. Luke is here, watching me with those same dancing eyes as he had when I first spied him in town. He sees only me, and I am happy, and suffused with fear at the same time. I square my shoulders. It is my act now, up to me to see this through. I nod at Goethe. I jump exactly as I had before, only this time, right before I reach Goethe, I pivot mid-air so I am facing away from her. But the move takes a second longer than I planned, and despite my warning, she fumbles. I am low now, almost too low for her to reach me. There is a slight gasp from the crowd. "Damn you," Goethe swears as she catches me, fingers digging hard into my wrists to hold on as we swing back, gaining height. Applause thunders as she throws me back toward my bar. The show breaks to intermission. I step into the backyard, still sweaty and shaking from my near fall. From around the side of the big top, Luke walks closer, looking for me. My pulse quickens as he nears. "Bonsoir," Luke says with a shy smile.
"Noah!"
A voice booms before I can respond. It is Estrid crossing the grounds and bearing down upon me, her eyes streaking with fury.
"What the hell do you think you're doing?"
she demands in German. She is even angrier than earlier when Herr Neuhoff pulled her from the show. Luke steps forward to protect me, but Estrid moves around him as though he is not there.
"I told you not to add the twist,"
she continues to berate me. I raise my chin. "The audience loved it." Estrid does not own the show. She does not own me.
"You were showing off for him."
She jerks her head in Luke's direction. My cheeks flush.
"That isn't true."
Before I can protest further, Herr Neuhoff walks into the backyard. I hold my breath, waiting for him to ask who Luke is and what he is doing here.
"Nice job, Noah,"
he says instead, smiling. It is the first time he has praised my performance, and I can feel myself standing straighter, vindicated.
"That variation was magnificent," he says with a smile.
I look triumphantly in Estrid's direction, wondering if she will now finally agree. But she seems to grow smaller. Guilt rises in me, replacing my joy. The ring had already been taken from Estrid. The control over the choreography was the one thing she still had, and I had stolen that, too. She turns and storms off. "I'll be back in a minute," I tell Luke. Then I follow after Estrid, who has started away from the backyard and toward the train. I take a deep breath as she turns back to me. "You were right about the move being foolish. It was dangerous, and it didn't add anything."
"That's why I told you not to do it,"
she sniffs, partially mollified.
"But you were showing off for him,"
she says again. "Him?" Though I know she means Luke, I feign ignorance, stalling for time to respond. She gestures toward the backyard, where Luke is waiting for me.
"The mayor's son. How do you know him?"
"The mayor's son?" I gasp with realization. I recall then what Estrid had said about the mayor, that he is collaborating with the Nazis. Does that mean Luke is helping the Germans too? It couldn't be. Estrid is still watching me, waiting for an answer. "I met him when I went into town," I say finally. "I had no idea he was coming to the show." She crosses her arms. "I thought I told you to stay away from the locals." "You did, but some boys were being rude to me, and Luke helped," I finish weakly.
"The mayor's son
just happened to rush to your rescue? Her tone is mocking. Then she lowers her voice.
Noah, we're an hour from Vichy headquarters. The mayor of this town is well connected to the Reich.
She stops abruptly as Luke walks over to us. As her words sink in, my blood chills. I had thought Luke was simply being nice. But is there a deeper reason for his interest? Estrid continues.
You claimed that you told Herr Neuhoff about Eric's colleague being at the show because you were worried about my safety. And then you do this?
Luke, who is now close to where we stand at the edge of the backyard, interjects.
I just wanted to see the show, he offers.
Peter steps forward in front of Estrid, almost chest to chest with Luke.
You need to go back to your seat,
he says in French.
And you need to stop doing that act mocking the Germans.
Luke flares with surprising force. Peter jerks back, stunned that Luke is standing up to him in a way that so few ever have.
How dare you?
But Luke, not intimidated, squares his shoulders.
They'll arrest you, you know.
Who will? Your father?
Though they had met only minutes earlier, hatred seethes between the two men.
Herr Neuhoff reappears.
Enough!
He orders.
We can't afford petty fights. There are officials in the audience. Gendarme.
Herr Neuhoff adds. The fact that they are not German officers is hardly reassuring. The French police are little more than puppets of the Reich these days. Peter and Estrid exchange uneasy looks. It seems too much of a coincidence, just days after the German officer who knew Estrid sat in the audience. My throat tightens. You don't think they've come for you, do you?
I don't know, Estrid replies,
her voice grim.
You need to go,
Peter says to Estrid.
No.
But where will she go, I wonder? When I turn to ask her, she is already gone. The bell rings, calling the audience back to their seats from intermission. As the house lights dim, I peer into the tent. Two uniformed men stand at the back. These are not officers on leave looking for a distraction or some entertainment to relax. Their arms are folded, stance purposeful. They had not been there during the first half of the show. I turn back to find that Peter and Estrid have disappeared from the backyard.
What should we do?
I ask Herr Neuhoff.
Go on. Just as we have. To do anything else would arouse suspicion.
From the tent comes the music of the next act. The Big Cats. You should go back to your seat, I tell Luke, who is still standing beside me. You're missing the show.
Yes, of course.
But still he lingers, brow creased.
You'll be all right? I mean, that woman, she seemed so angry at you.
It is not the police, but rather Estrid who worries Luke. I take him in uncertainly. He seems so sincere. But he hadn't even told me he is the mayor's son. Could Estrid possibly be right about him?
Can I see you after the show?
Luke presses. His voice is hopeful as he tips his head toward the grove of trees beyond the backyard.
Over there, in the clearing, yes? I will wait behind the knotted oak.
You have to go, I say, ignoring his question. I point toward his seat before slipping away. The tiger cage is being wheeled from the stage, and the next act, the high wire, prepared. Two gendarmes start forward toward the ring. I glance over my shoulder. Estrid is nowhere to be found. Could they possibly be coming for me? It seems impossible that anyone here could know about my taking Theo. But still... I look toward the back exit, desperate to go find him. But the police reach the second row of seats and stop before the man with the little girl who had cotton candy. They crouch low as they speak to him, trying not to interfere with the show. I slink closer along the edge of the big top until I am just a few meters away from the argument, close enough to hear. One of the policemen gestures toward the exit, instructing the man to go with them.
You need to come with us.
Luke twists around in his seat to see. I wait for him to say something, to intervene. He does not.
But the show,
the father pleads, his voice rising. The orchestra halts mid-song. All eyes are watching the altercation now.
Surely it can wait until the end.
He places his hand on his daughter, as if protecting her. The policeman will hear none of it, though.
Now!
One reaches for the man's shoulder, prepared to drag him from the tent. What could they want with him? Come, darling, the father says, as gently as he can to the little girl.
We will come back to the show another day.
His voice breaks at the end.
I want to see the elephants.
The girl's lip quivers.
She can stay, the policeman says coldly. We only want you.
The man stares at the police officer in disbelief.
Monsieur, she's four. Surely you don't mean for me to leave her here alone?
Then bring her with you. Now!
The officer commands. The father takes the girl's wrist firmly, trying to leave before they are taken. But she resists, breaking into a wail and dropping to the ground, not noticing the mud that soils her dress. He is pleading with her now, desperate to cooperate before the officers intercede. There is a murmur around the ring. The townspeople have undoubtedly seen arrests before, but a father with an innocent child taken from the show? One of the officers reaches for his truncheon.
Stop!
I want to cry. I have to do something. Instinctively, I go toward the ladder at the right side of the ring and climb it. At the top, I catch the eye of the conductor and nod to him. His eyes widen with surprise. This is not in the program. Then he lifts his baton. The orchestra strikes up a lively tune, and the spotlight focuses on me. Out of the corner of my eye, I see the police stop what they are doing to watch. Across the big top, Estrid waves her arms, signaling me down. It is too late. I leap from the board, swinging as high as I ever have. But now what? I have no catcher, and simply swinging will not hold their attention for long. Desperately, I let go of the bar. I tuck myself into a ball and somersault once, then twice through the air as I catapult downward. There is nothing to catch or stop me. Just before reaching the net, I lie myself out flat, as Estrid taught me to do in case of a fall, slowing myself. I angle my rear end downward so that it, and not my limbs or neck, take the brunt. There is a gasp as I plummet.
Mon Dieu!
A high-pitched voice in the crowd cries. I hit the net, and my head snaps forward and back. Pain shoots through me, and white sparks erupt in my eyes, as I slam against the floor once, and then a second time, almost as hard. I lie still, too stunned and hurt to move. I keep my eyes closed. Hands are on me, lifting me and carrying me from the net, as they had Yetta the night she fell. But as we reach the ground, I shrug them off and struggle to rise on my own. Somehow, despite the height and speed with which I fell, I am sore but not injured. Had it worked? I curtsy elegantly, and the applause grows. Out of the corner of my eye, I see the father carrying his daughter from the tent, while the police are distracted.
"Clowns! Send elephants!"
I hear Herr Neuhoff instruct. He has a plan, Astrid had told me once, to curtail the show without ending it abruptly. I make my way from the tent, legs shaking so much I can barely find my footing. Astrid approaches then, having slipped out the far side of the big top and come around.
"Are you all right?"
she asks, and I study her unfamiliar expression, somewhere short of anger. Concern. She is worried about me, even after everything that I have done. Tears form in my eyes. She has been so furious with me, first for telling Herr Neuhoff, and then for adding the move. "I'm sorry," I say, my voice breaking. "I want so much to make everything between us whole. I never meant to hurt you."
"I know," she says. "It's all right."
"Really?" I look up. She nods.
"Really."
The forgiveness in her eyes is complete. "I'm sorry," I repeat, needing to say it again. I burst into tears, and she draws me close, letting the wetness soak the fabric of her dress without complaint. A moment later, I straighten, drying my eyes.
"But Noah, you must be careful,"
Astrid says once I've collected myself. Her voice is gentle, but her eyes grave. "We have so much to lose now." She is talking, I realize, about Luke and the danger he could bring. Peter approaches us from the big top, and I can tell from his expression that he is angry.
"Fool!" he spits at me. "Now you've caused even more trouble for the circus. What were you thinking, inviting that boy?"
I am surprised. I had expected him to berate me for what I had done on the trapeze, as Astrid had. But for everything that happened, he is still furious about the mayor's son. Maybe because Luke had the nerve to confront him about his act. He is worried, of course, about the danger to Astrid. I want to point out, as Luke had, that if Peter is so worried about her safety, maybe he shouldn't do acts that mock the Germans. I do not dare. "I didn't," I protest instead. "He came on his own. He wanted to see the show."
"Of course he did,"
Peter retorts, his tone mocking.
"The mayor's son comes, and then the police? Pure coincidence. After everything we've done for you,"
Peter continues, gathering steam.
"Taking you in and training you, and this is how you repay the kindness? We should kick you out."
Panic grows in me. What if he persuades Herr Neuhoff to do just that? Astrid raises a hand, as if to ward him off.
"Enough."
Confusion clouds his eyes as she defends me. She puts her hand on his arm gently.
"She did the right thing."
Astrid looks at me with newfound admiration.
"You could have been killed, though,"
she adds to me, the concern returning to her voice. "I didn't think. I had to do something. That poor man." My voice is trembling, though whether from the fall or Peter's wrath, I cannot tell.
"It won't matter," Peter says. "The police will go to the man's house and find him."
I hope that the man and his daughter might have had time to flee, just as I had with Theo. I want to believe against all hope that what I had done might have made a difference. But I know that they will probably not be as lucky. "Now do you see why I had to tell Herr Neuhoff about the German?" I ask Astrid. "The arrest tonight, that could have been you." She shakes her head stubbornly.
"I would have been fine,"
She considers the circus a shield of armor that somehow makes her immune to the Germans, but it simply isn't true.
You can't save everyone, you know.
I'm not trying to save everyone, I protest. Just Theo. And you, I add silently. But when I had seen the police about to take that girl, something had stirred me to act, the same as it had the night I had rescued Theo from the boxcar.
Then you must think more carefully before you act,
Astrid admonishes.
Inviting the male's son here was foolish.
I didn't invite him, I insist again. But I hadn't told him not to come either. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cause any harm.
I know, she replies. But our actions have consequences. Good intentions won't save us from that.
The music cues, signaling the final bow. As Astrid helps me to my feet, I feel a sharp pain across my back that I hope is nothing more than a bruise. Limping, I follow her back inside the big top and up the ladder to the perch. The gendarmes have gone. Worry mixes with my relief. Had they followed the girl and her father? Luke has left his seat, too, I notice, as I make my sweeping bows to the crowd below. I wonder if he will be waiting for me in the grove, as he said. Or maybe, after all that has happened, he will have given up. After everything that happened, perhaps it would be for the best. The audience hurries from the ring after the show, not loitering as they usually do, but wanting to make it home and far away from the trouble. As we make our way from the tent, Herr Neuhoff comes into the backyard. He sinks down on top of an overturned crate, breathing hard.
An arrest at the circus, he pants. I never would have imagined.
Until recently, the circus has been a haven from the war, like being inside a snow globe while the world continues outside. But the walls are thinning. I think back to Darmstadt, recalling Astrid's reaction when I remarked that we would be safe in France. Even then she had known the truth. Nowhere is safe anymore. Mopping at his brow with a handkerchief, he continues.
They've gone for now, but I want all of you to go back to your quarters immediately, and stay there.
I wait for him to rebuke me for what I had done on the trapeze, but he does not. I look in the direction of the grove, searching for Luke. I spy him, half hidden behind a leaning oak. Still here. Our eyes meet. He had seen me fall, and his face is wracked with worry. I start to smile, raising my hand in a low wave to signal to him that I am all right. His expression relaxes somewhat, but his eyes remain locked on me, bidding me to come closer. I take a step forward. But Herr Neuhoff is still sitting on the crate, watching. I cannot go to Luke. I shouldn't want to anyway, I remind myself. He kept from me the fact that he is the mayor's son. Could Astrid be right about him hiding other things as well? Luke is still watching me, seeming to hold his breath, waiting. Several seconds pass. I take a step backward. Even if I wanted to, I would not dare defy Herr Neuhoff's order and go after the police have been here. Luke's face shifts from hopeful to confused, and then disappointed as he realizes I am not coming toward him. I take another step backward and nearly trip on something lying on the ground. By the edge of the big top, a doll lies in the dirt. I picture the girl who had been too upset at having to leave the circus to notice dropping it. Despite her father's promises, she will not be coming back. I pick up the doll and take it with me for Theo. Then I turn back to look at Luke once more. He has started in the direction of the village, shoulders low.
Wait!
I want to cry. But I do not, and a moment later, he is gone.
Chapter 13. Astrid. It is not quite dawn when I climb the ladder to the trapeze in near darkness. The entire chapiteau lit only by a single spluttering bulb that someone had forgotten to turn off. From the benches, the big top appears magnificent. But up here, the fabric is faded, and around the edges, the tassels frayed. Old music, tinny like that of the carousel at the end of the midway, plays in my mind. I see my brothers, teasing one another as they prepared to perform. The air seems to dance with the ghosts of my family. I take hold of the bar and jump, flying through the air. I am ignoring my own admonishment to Noah never to fly alone. I have no choice, though. I can no longer perform, but I cannot stay on the ground.
You are addicted to the adrenaline, Peter has accused me more than once.
I want to argue, but it is true. There is a moment as I stare down from the board, the split second before I let go, where I am always certain I am going to die. That clarity, the focus of that moment, is what I miss most about not performing, more so than the adulation of the crowd or anything else. The previous night, when Noah had gone into the ring without me, was the first time I had ever actually observed the circus in its entirety. As I watched the show, I was reminded of the time Eric had taken me to the Volksoper to see a show, the Jungfrau von Orleans. Surrounded by the fashionable Berlin women and clouds of Chanel, I shifted around in my seat awkwardly, feeling as if I did not belong. But as the show began, I was able to see so much that others could not. The way the set was made to give the illusion of depth. How the act was enhanced with the little tricks all we performers had. I realized then that I could see through people, on stage or not. I had been doing it my whole life. I fly higher, as if trying to outrun my memories. Heaving my legs upward, I swing high back to the board. Fine perspiration coats my skin and my legs ache pleasantly. That Herr Neuhoff said I might get to perform again when we reach the next town is little consolation. That is still 2 weeks away. A lifetime of performances. And there are no guarantees that I will be permitted to remain in the ring. Now that Herr Neuhoff is aware of the peril, he will pull me from the show at the slightest of scares. Scares like the police interrupting the show a few days earlier. Seeing the little girl's face in the audience, the full magnitude of just how bad things have become crashes down upon me. She had started that day brightly, like any other, as I had that last morning in Berlin with Eric. Not knowing, in just hours, her world would be destroyed. I wipe my eyes, brushing away the sting. In my family, one did not cry, not for illness or death or other tragedy. And even as a girl, I had held my tears through it all. It could have been worse, I remind myself. It could have been me the police had come to arrest. I leap again and hang on to the bar in midair, not trying to swing higher, but letting the gentle rocking motion carry me back and forth. It seems for just a moment that if I do not move, I can go back in time, and everything will be as it once was. My body, this flight, they cannot take these from me, despite the thing Noah had done. The things Noah had done, I correct myself.
It was more than just telling Herr Neuhoff about the German officer. She had invited the mayor's son to the show. And she had thrown herself from the trapeze in an attempt to save that man and his daughter from the police. A stunt as foolish as it was brave. Though we are nothing alike, more and more, I see a headstrongness about Noah that reminds me of myself when I was young. An impulsiveness that makes her a danger to herself and to all of us. Suddenly, I am dizzy. Something hits my stomach then, a wave of nausea so strong I almost lose my grip on the bar. I break out in a sweat, and my palms grow dangerously moist. I struggle to make my way back up to the board. Failing moments like this are why I tell Noah she should not swing alone. Looking down, I am seized with fear. Circus performers are not known to have long lives. There were those who died in their act, or were injured to the point they withered away. I run through the performers I know, those in my family and beyond, to try to find a single one who had lived to his or her 70th birthday. But I cannot. With a last desperate swing, I soar higher and reach the platform, legs trembling. I have never fallen before, or even come close. What is wrong with me? Another wave of nausea sweeps over me, and I make it down the ladder just in time to heave into a bucket that is not my own. I carry it outside to wash at the pump before anyone notices. The stench of wet bile causes my stomach to roil anew. I press my hand against my midsection. I had practically been born in the air, and have never been sick from it. I've heard other aerialists speak of such things, suddenly being unable to tolerate the height or motion, but that was when they were ill or pregnant. Pregnant. I freeze, stunned by the idea. It simply isn't possible. But it is the only answer that makes sense. There had been a liquor-filled night right before leaving the winter quarters. I had not bled in almost 3 months, but that was not uncommon, and I attributed it to the toll performing and practicing took on my body. Surely, if it were something more, I would have known. I return to the big top and sit numbly on one of the benches, denial whirling through my mind. Eric and I had tried so long to have a child. Before his work became all-consuming, we would make love nearly every night and two or three times a day on the weekends. But nothing had ever come of it. I had assumed that the fault had all been mine. I'd wondered how my mother could have been fertile enough to bear 5 children and me none. Year after year, it hadn't happened, and eventually we stopped talking about it. The problem had lain with Eric, I realized smugly, not me. His perfect Aryan body was flawed. There would be no family for him with someone else either. But my anxiety quickly eclipses any bit of satisfaction. Pregnancy had been the furthest thing from my mind. A child, a long-forgotten dream. I am too old to be starting a family. Peter, with his moods and depression, hardly seems like an ideal father. We are not that kind of a couple, and we have no home. I could take care of it. I have heard whispers of such things more than once during my years with the circus. Even as I think it, though, I know this is not an option. Peter walks in, and it is the one time I am not glad to see him. I swipe a hand across my cheeks to make sure they are dry, then cover my stomach, as though he might see the difference. I do not want to tell him and add to the stress and exhaustion of performing and being on the road. He does not need to worry about this now. I wait for him to see that I am pale and shaking.